Saturday, November 24th, Oscar De La Hoya's Golden Boy Promotions presents Chuck, the Iceman Liddell, as he returns to the cage to take on the Huntington Beach bad boy Tito Ortiz in the third and final chapter of their historic rivalry at the Fabulous Forum, plus a fully stacked undercard of competitive MMA talent. Do not miss another chapter of this historic rivalry. Saturday, November 24th at the Forum. Tickets start at $30 and they're available at Ticketmaster.com. or by calling 800-745-3000. 800-745-3000. Moving right through hour number two. Welcome back. I'm Jim Rome. We're joined in studio right now by a Pac-12 football analyst. He is also a filmmaker. He is a New York Times bestselling author. He is the host of the Life Without Limits podcast, and he does hold the distinction of being the first ever in-studio guest on CBS Sports Network and the only man who gets his own custom greeting on this show. Yogi Roth is my guest. Yogi, it is so good to see you, man. How are you?
I love it. I love coming here every time. The growth of this show, what you've done, you always inspire me. But I love going to college campuses now. The next generation of listeners, they're on. And whenever I'm on, they're like, dude, saw you on Rome. That was awesome.
Oh, I love hearing that, by the way.
I appreciate that,
man. I mean that sincerely. I really, obviously, as somebody who's done this as long as I have, I love that the college kids know that you're on the show and hear you on the show. But, Yogi, really importantly, it is Thanksgiving week. We are into the crunch time in college football. I have one question and one question only. How great is ball?
It's awesome, man. I mean, this is why you live for this game. You know, for me, I mean, the essence of this game is the humanity within it and the competition that exudes from it. And that's exactly what we have this weekend in the Apple Cup, if you're looking at the Pac-12.
Oh, yeah.
UW, Wazoo, everything is at stake. Heisman candidacy, obviously the Pac-12 North, the potential Rose Bowl berth, but the argument of the college football playoff. And you can go around the country, and there's just great rivalry games here with Ohio State, Michigan, Bama, Auburn. I mean, you're going to find some real truths out about everybody. And, of course, in college football, we're over the top with the drama. I mean, we are just putting so much on this last week. So I love it, man. I can't believe it's here.
Yogi Roth joining me in studio. We'll talk USC and UCLA also that went down this past weekend. But what about Washington, Washington State? Let me start with Washington State. When you look at them on film, what sticks out to you the most?
Well, I think there's a bunch of things. You have to start with Gardner Minshew. I mean, I love what Tua Tagovailoa has done. Love what Kyler Murray's done. But how do you not love what Gardner Minshew's done? To me, honestly, Jim, it's the best story. This is my 18th year. I'm finishing up in college football. Best story, and I've been racking my brain all year, by far. I mean, you look at what happened with Tyler Helinski in the passing Washington State. Mike Leach possibly going to another college. This team projected at maybe four wins, losing their stars on the defensive side. And in comes in the Mississippi mustache. May 5th isn't there for spring ball.
It's insane.
And the best part is he understands the situation he's walking into, so he just lays low. And then late in the summer, he goes up to sixth-year senior Peyton Pelora, the captain at linebacker, and says, can I finally talk to the team now? He goes, yeah, go ahead. Go for it, man. After the workout in July, he addresses the team, and it's been his team ever since. And then he's led the nation in touchdown passes, in yards, a team that obviously is on the brink of some really special things. Find me a better story. I mean, find a better story in the country than Gardner Minshew. I don't think it exists.
I'm not sure there is one. Now, there's no doubt that there is power in the stash. We know this. But facial hair aside, what is the most impressive part to you about his game?
Yeah, I think it's his second and third reaction game. So first reaction game would be like when it's clean in the pocket. Can you beat Tom Brady, sit back and deal? Luke Falk clearly had done that and is the Pac-12's all-time leading passer. His second reaction game is when it gets a little dirty in the pocket. A D lineman comes in, he can avoid him. And then when a linebacker comes from depth, he can avoid him too and get to his third reaction, keep his eyes down the field, and deal. And this system, everybody thinks that, oh, it's four verticals. That's the air raid. Everybody runs it. System. It's not. There's way more to that. It's timing. It's tempo. It's anticipation. And this guy plays with his eyes. You know, I hear analysts a lot say, you got to have great footwork in the pocket as a quarterback. And that's fair, but I believe you are trained from your eyes. So, for instance, if I took a piece of dental floss from your eyelids to your feet, they'd be connected. And where you looked, your feet would follow. And I think that's how you train a quarterback. And when you look at this young man, that's what he does. His eyes know where to go. His feet follow. Mechanically, he's not flawed. And he makes every type of throw in the catalog of passes. So I love everything about him. This system isn't just four verts. There's triangles that would make Bill Walsh fired up, like the West Coast systems. There's, of course, checking it down your back. But This guy does everything, including galvanizes an entire community, makes one-handed catches on the sideline. I mean, throws for seven tugs last week, and he has done everything that I think is necessary to be a Heisman candidate and be one of the top quarterbacks in the country.
Huge, huge game, and it's got some national implications as well. Yogi Roth joins me in studio. USC loses to a two-win UCLA team, 34-27. What's that game say about where both those teams are right now?
A lot. I mean, number one, you know, everybody lauded the Chip Kelly hire, and we should. I remember going to the press conference, and it was like I was at a rock concert. You know, it was bonkers. And you look at what they've done really since the Cal game. I called that game on the Pac-12 networks, and I'm calling the game against Stanford this Saturday with Ted Robinson and Jill Savage at noon. And they've just stayed the course. And it makes you think, if Wilton Spate wasn't hurt, the grad transfer in the second quarter of the Cincinnati game, maybe this team goes bowling. You know, they've played 20 true freshmen. 20. Not 20 freshmen and redshirt freshmen combined. 20 true freshmen, including a right guard on the offensive line, two interior defensive tackles, five different receivers, two running backs, and obviously a quarterback in Dorian Thompson-Robinson. So you got to tip your cap to Chip Kelly of just staying the course. And there's this side of him, I think, as reporters, where we're like, give us more, give us more. And he's just like, hey, guys, we're just going to keep working. We just keep chopping wood, carrying water. And that's what they've done. So I was really impressed. They dominated the lines of scrimmage. I watched it late last night, just kind of prepping for this and for the week. And physically, they won on both sides of the line of scrimmage, which you wouldn't have thought that was possible with what SC had coming back this year. So big props to UCLA where that program is. And that win is massive with this early signing period. UCLA, everybody's ripping them for only offering 56 guys. That's okay. They've offered the 56 they want, and they're going to get a couple more after last weekend's win.
Yogi Roth joining me in studio. Now, Yogi, I could talk to you more about the conference, but one of the things that I really like having you on this show is we could talk about life overall. Earlier this month, you wrote a really powerful piece for The Athletic about the shooting at the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh. You played your college football at Pittsburgh. I know how much that city means to you. What was your reaction when you saw the alert on your phone that read, shooting in Pittsburgh Synagogue?
Yeah, well, your heart kind of breaks whenever you see it. And then I think as a society, I don't know if you'd agree, but there's just another one. Oh, here comes another one type of mentality, which is sick, right? The fact that we can think that. And I was in my hotel in Northern California prepping for Stanford Wazoo and calling that game that night. And I texted the two people that I'm really close with that live in Squirrel Hill, that community where the shooting was. And not expecting a response of,
Yogi,
I was involved.
Excuse me, who were those two people?
So one was Jesse Irwin, whose family took me in. The other one is a woman named Michelle Rosenthal. And Michelle was the director of player development for the Steelers in the community relations department. She worked for the mayor. I was her intern in my college years. And she texted me back and said, not good. My two brothers are there. One shot. Not confirmed if he's dead. We don't know about the other. And you just sink. And I can remember prepping to call that game that day. And here we go, and I'm texting her the day going on. Of course, she's not answering her phone. There's so much happening. And the next morning, I get another alert where they release the names. And Cecil and David Rosenthal were on them. And the worst part about that was, of course, talking to Michelle and hearing that story. And her two brothers were mentally challenged. But honestly, it was talking to my mom, whose parents were Holocaust survivors. And her dad was in a concentration camp. And I'm telling her the story, and she knows Michelle and her family. And she goes, man, it reminds me of the Holocaust because two guys got executed. And if you think about it, they were the two people that probably welcomed everybody in. They were the two pseudo ushers at the synagogue. And that one broke me when my mom said that, thinking of that's real. Like that's the times that we're in and the amount of hate that was there. So you know, I was crushed. And then to see the city of Pittsburgh slowly, as it always will, piece itself back together, the country do that, the nation, the globe do that, of, okay, we can come back together, and you know what can help us is a ball. And I believe in the power of play and the power of a ball, and I believe in the phrase, we all speak ball. And it did that in a small, subtle way, whether it was Pitt winning, the Steelers winning their last couple. You know, it slowly pieced that thing together. And a chance to talk to Michelle the other day, and of course, she's still crushed and will be for a long time. But those little things, you know, they help along the way, man. So it was crazy. It was absolutely crazy.
Yogi Roth is my guest. I appreciate your thoughts on the story. But there's more to it because ball helps a lot of things, right? But love, too. As an example, your grandparents, as you mentioned, were Holocaust survivors. And when you talk to them about their time in concentration camps and all the horrific things they witnessed, their message to you has been, Yogi, love wins. Love wins. So when you see so much hate and so much violence in the world, how do you live from a place of love wins?
Well, I think you got to be optimistic. I mean, what are you going to do? You know, I can remember being a boy, you know, sitting across the table just like this and seeing my grandparents. And I remember like yesterday, I had a little cup of ginger ale in this teal glass. And I thought ginger ale was like the coolest thing as a kid. And they would tell their stories. And in short, grandfather was shot 8 times in his upper left shoulder, played dead for a couple of days, saved by a gypsy, heals back to health, and joins the partisan movement, which would save people at night and hide out during the day. And he had lost his first wife, his first child, gone through hell and back. I mean, think about it. When you're in a concentration camp, you don't know if you're taking a shower, if you're going to all of a sudden be breathing gas and your life's over. Flip side, grandmother, she walks home from school one day and a teacher pulls up beside her and says, you can't go home. She says, why? She says, your entire family was just murdered. They were axed to death. And she went on the run from that moment on in her life. Hid out in a farmhouse, wouldn't tell people, obviously, her religion and her faith.
She was how old?
She was 12 when she came home from school and that happened. And as life would have it, of course, as the war ends, those two get on a train, happen to sit next to each other, share their stories, get married, you know, eventually have my mom live in a refugee camp in Germany and end up taking a boat over to the U.S., and that's why I'm here. But I tell that story and share that story not for anybody's sympathy, but to say when things got hard, they would always look at me and say, hey, man, A, it ain't that tough, and B, love wins. And it never really made sense to me until I got older and started to piece it together. Like, yeah, like, have the goodness in your heart. Hate Auburn, hate Alabama, hate UW, hate Wazoo. That's cool. Like, that's part of sports, but it's not malicious, right? It needs to be in fun, in the spirit of play, in the spirit of humanity, and in the spirit of love because you love your team so much. You love your sport so much. So it took me a while to figure that out, but I always go,
How tough is it really? Yeah. I mean, what a powerful message. Yogi Roth joining us. So your podcast, Life Without Limits, for those who have not heard it before, what does that mean, Life Without Limits?
Well, to me, it's you got to go for it, you know, and I think that in everything, you know, whether that's, you know, jumping off the high dive, you're going to hold your nose, put your hands up. I'll put my hands up, right? You're going to walk on a pit or play at a small school. To me, I had to walk on. I had to play in front of that crowd. I had to show and prove to myself that I could or couldn't do it. And got lucky and played. And that's kind of just been my way that I live my life. It's not a stick your chest out and look at me, let's go big. It's I just think that innately we want to play big until somebody says don't, until we get slapped down. And think of all kids, if you're around them, they have this childlike fascination with everything. They want to charge. They want to go. They want to go for it.
They don't know any different.
They don't know any different until they're taught, don't throw a whole shot into cover two. Just check the ball down. Don't look somebody in the eye and ask an uncomfortable question in this society. Be your son who's on his way to college. Just be passive. Just no issues. F that. I mean, let's go for it. Let's grow. You know, you're either going to live in a growth mindset or a fixed mindset, right? And to me, it's I want to learn, and whether that's learning through failing or learning through success, but the only way you learn is you take shots. It's why I probably love Garner Minshew's story. He's gone for it. Could have played it safe and been a GA at Bama, been Tua's backup, coach there. Okay, life is great. He said, you know what? Let's take a run with this Mike Leach character, and now I'm leading the nation in passing.
Yeah, in 30 seconds or less, and I didn't mean to spend so much time on things that are not football related because you work so hard at it, but you're so interesting to me. 30 seconds or less, what's that say about Mike Leach that he did what he did with Minshew?
He's coach of the year. He's national coach of the year. You know, to keep that team together the way they have. And look, he's an interesting guy. He's a unique guy. He's very unorthodox. Didn't even play college football, right? But he's got this mind that is very artistic. You talk to him about it. He's a guy who, I'll talk to him at midnight when he's walking home. He's a late night thinker. And late night thinkers are probably like you, myself. A lot of artists and creative minds go there. So it's special. It's powerful. And now he's got his team on the verge and the Apple Cup of doing things they haven't done in a while.
Big showdown. Pac-12 football analyst and a pros pro. Look at that right on cue. A filmmaker and New York Times bestselling author, host of the Life Without Limits podcast. And once again, our first in-studio guest ever.